Great. So welcome, Kate. This is my the first guest on the Rebranding Middle Age podcast.
Well, that's kind of an honor. Whoa.
I'm really excited to be here with you today and and having some guests this season. So just right off the bat, I'll introduce you. So Kate Codrington is a mentor, author, speaker, facilitator, artist, and podcaster. The author of Second Spring, The Self-Care Guide to Menopause, which is part of the menopause canon, according to the New York Times. Kate mentors people in perimenopause and beyond, one-on-one and in groups. She's a nature-based yoga nidra meditation guide, hosts Life and Inside Job podcast, has been a therapist for more than 30 years and creates multi-level art textile projects, often very colorful ones, I believe. When she's not doing these things, you'll find her playing in her compost heaps. And her second book, The Perimenopause Journal, is coming out September 2024. And you can find Kate at katecodrington.co.uk. So I found you, Kate, because of your work with midlife women. More specifically, I found you initially through your book, Second Spring, which I recommend to humans everywhere. So my work largely centers around the needs and experiences of midlife women, and largely in helping women, and myself, I'm always doing the work and practicing alongside. But helping us quiet the conditioning and noise to, as I say, reclaim freedom, wholeness, and joy. So I'm excited to explore the theme of this season of my podcast, which is Old Stories, New Possibilities. That's a great title, isn't it? It lights me up.
Yes, as soon as I read it, I thought, oh, where this conversation could go in so many directions.
I'd love to dive in. So I guess I'll just read this little bit that I had sent to you. I hadn't planned that, but I shared with you that I'm thinking about the stories we're told or inherit through conditioning and the storytelling of family, religion, media, culture, etc. And how, if we want to walk in greater freedom, health, and joy, we do need to quiet that conditioning and noise to uncover the truth of who we are. So I always say, like, we meet true self somewhere under there, under all that muck and noise. And then in that sort of becoming more fully our true selves, we can be more truthful or do some truth telling around what it is that we truly want and need. Why don't we start with you sharing the season or seasons that you are in?
Thank you. Well, I'm 58. It's a long time since I had a period, so I would place myself in second spring, so post-menopause, becoming post-menopause, and more towards second summer, I think. I can feel some gathering momentum, say. And increasing stability and grounding as well. And it's a bit scary, but it's quite exciting. It's very exciting.
It just went out of my brain the second you said it. Did you say that you are 56?
58.
58. Okay. So, what feels scary about that, if you don't mind sharing?
Summer. If you think about an ovulatory summer, it tends to be to do with pleasing the world. It's world-facing rather than self-facing. It's about seeing one's gift manifest in the world, about validation, about external validation and internal validation. But spring and summer are much more about facing the world, and autumn and winter are much more about facing ourselves. So having been in a a long perimenopause and menopause process, and second spring just kind of stepping out a little bit and then stepping back in the cave and stepping out a little bit more and going, oh God, it's too bright. Climbing back in again to face, to think about summer with its world facingness and intensity and fullness and being big and being seen is feels pretty full on.
Yeah, just curious, are you an introvert? Yeah, so I noticed that in my work, a lot of us who are strong introverts or highly sensitive humans, we do struggle with the intensity of summer, or that almost demand for sustained outward energy that feels very almost threatening sometimes. And so is that some of what you're, it sounds like that might be some of
Yeah,
what you're
that describes it
expressing.
very well. In terms of, it makes it remind, when you were describing that, I was thinking about when I used to ovulate, and it was, that was really hard to hold, that kind of intense kind of fizzing, buzzing, skin full of fizz kind of energy, was very difficult to contain. I was quite often irritable, or I would overspill, or it was difficult place to be. And having said all that, I have, a few decades more life experience now. I was in a process this morning looking at exactly this fear and what I need to be mindful of at this time. And actually, what I'm feel like I'm stepping into is different. I think that in our second summer, as we age, we have a more, it's not all me, me, me. I mean, obviously, I'm self-obsessed, clearly. It's not all me, me, me. It's about community. It's about serving the community post-menopause and stepping up to do that. So it has a different, and that in itself is, it feels bigger. Yeah, so got the shivers and the tingles, and yeah, interesting time. Oh, it's always interesting.
I'll be watching. Because I don't know, I'm early second spring and my relationship with summer is a little awkward and uncomfortable. So I'm going to be growing into that over the next years to come. But also with that hopeful kind of stance that I'm going to go into second summer way differently equipped than my first summer. So,
Yeah, and the kind of the care that you give yourself now, the rest that you can give yourself now, the containment, the reserves, the resources that you can give yourself now will fuel that second summer in 5, 10 years' time, whenever. So that you will have a more grounded and more, you just have more juice.
I mean, we could stay here for the whole hour. Like, honestly, I didn't even ask your permission to stay in a whole hour, actually. But what comes to mind is how it's something that I think it's worth saying to, and maybe this will be hopeful and encouraging to anyone listening as well. Like when we find ourselves in a more challenging season and we think, will this ever shift? Learning how to just stay in the discomfort or the work of what is, whatever season we're in, is where we like, that's what prepares us for what's next, right? But there's a natural human tendency to be like, can spring please come? I'm ready, I'm ready. And especially I find if we're in like winter seasons, like the waiting to get to what's next. But it is where this work is necessary for what's next. And I can even feel that right now in early second spring. I'm like, but there's work to do and I have these dreams and even frankly around money, like but my family needs the finances now. Like all of these sort of different tensions that can show up and learning how do we stay in that tension and discomfort, but also honor the work of this season so that we can show up healthy and whole and yeah, and equipped for what's next. That wasn't a question, it was an observation, but feel free to speak to that.
Yeah, we always want to be. I mean, it's normal for humans to move away from pain. That's what we do.
Yeah, right.
You know,
Yeah.
that's what we've evolved to do. But we've become, I don't know, pain averse. You know, the wellness industry has a lot to answer for in terms of promising happiness and empowerment and fullness and wholeness and la 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 every day. And self-esteem and all the things, you know. And humans, we don't do that all the time. You know, unrealistic expectations are an absolute killer.
Right. So, like, we don't always hear the full truth. We see the shiny, pos like I feel like even those of us who do try to show up as truth tellers, I noticed this in my own work. Like, people still, I remind people, it's like you still only see 1% of me, because when I'm in deep grief and like falling apart and I can't get out of bed, I'm not showing up on Instagram. Like, so I can tell you a little bit, but there's no way to see the full reality of what it means to be fully human and keep showing up.
And also people want to project wellness onto you. They, you know, your community, your audience need you to be whole, to be the big whole person for them to feel held. And of course it's an illusion. And of course it's what is it? Brittle. It's a brittle projection. It shatters. But yeah, we need to project this idealized notion onto other people. I'm quite good at dodging projections. It's like playing ping pong or tennis. No, take that back. Very, very imperfect.
I mean, So when you were sharing about the season you're in your life cycle, I get this sort of what comes up for me in my body and my mind is this sense of like how kind of spring to in summer we start expanding. So we expand our capacity in so many different ways. And then that brings me, like, I'd wanted to ask you about, well, I'd wanted to ask about growth edge, but I think maybe I'll just go right there then. Because I see those kind of being linked. Like, so what is your current growth edge, Kate? Or do you think in that term, or like, what are you noticing that you're sort of expanding in or kind of pushing gently even against the kind of edges of your current capacity?
Yeah, I thank you for asking. It's a really good question. My current edge is around having courage to trust in the liminal space and to be more, to bring that out more, you know, to connect more with that. So that might mean really, really saying how I feel or taking a risk about my fantasies about someone or just going there with people.
And do you mean just being willing to be like real and vulnerable and let yourself be seen, or what do you mean?
Yes, there's something that's involved in it. But it's about connection. It's about allowing my insides, giving my inside sensation, movement, emergent process, the sort of wibbly wobbly, slightly felt sensations, giving them space, more space to express and to evolve into something bigger, and then to have them brought into the community, into the conversation. So that it's so I'm typically fairly, I'm typically fairly vulnerable and fairly authentic and fairly out there, but this is something else. It's edgy. It's edgy, so it's hard to describe. feels fragile, you know?
So are you practicing right now in your workspaces?
And that involves being, you know, being a bad mentor. It involves fucking up. Oh, are we swearing? I forgot to ask.
Comfortable with swearing.
Okay. I thought so, but I didn't check earlier. It involves fucking up in public and being, you know, practicing being really comfortable with that and being staying more with it. And in my family, my personal life, my family, friends too. Yeah.
So is it akin to at least a little bit to like just allow embracing your full messiness
Yes,
and
that's part of it.
playfulness and like
Yeah,
just
that's part of it too. But you know, sometimes you have a dream. You're with somebody and you have a little fantasy about something that seems almost irrelevant or disjointed or nothing to do with them. And I'm exploring what happens if I say that. You know, so with a close friend or close colleague, there would be no risk. There would be like zero risk. But with somebody, you know, somebody else, there is more risk involved. So I'm calibrating and titrating and exploring how it is to allow more of that inner world out, inner on the outer. There you go. That's a clearer way of expressing it, isn't it? So that's an aspect of a second summer, I think. Because I'm not, you know, I have been like fiercely protective, fiercely boundaried around my inner life, like, you know, really not sharing, talking about it or allowing that out. Because it feels so precious and so soft and vulnerable. But that's changed.
This is a bit of a just a tiny little spin-off, but I also think of summer, yeah, that full that expression of self, however that comes up for different people. And for you, I think it includes using your voice. And one thing, because on the theme of like old stories, new possibilities, one thing that what comes up often in my mind and conversations, but how I desperately need slash want more storytelling from women who are ahead of me on the journey. Like the tr I'm a deep I deeply crave real. Like I have a strong inner critic and perfectionist protective tendencies and all that. I don't need one more person like being shiny. Like I'm like, tell me the truth. Show me what is real. I want to see brave examples of women walking in freedom, as messily as what that looks. And I think, suspect that that's one of the beautiful things that happens in Second Summer is like women start to own themselves in a new way and put themselves out there. And it's like we need that. Like I know that the women slightly behind me, like whether that's age or just in some of the learning things. They need me. They need me to show up and be real. And I'm looking ahead to saying, where are the women doing this work, claiming, the beauty of this season, not shrinking back and not buying into the stories around, disappearing just because you turned 50 or 60. I'm like, what? Like, that's, I just don't buy into it. And I'm fortunate that there have been women ahead of me paving the road so I can be in this place of privilege, right? Anyway, that's what's coming up for me as you're sharing. So I guess I do have a question for you. Do you have women ahead of you on the journey that you get to look to as a model of sorts?
Yeah, well, I'm lucky. I have two older sisters, and
Okay.
they're how old are they? They're, you know, a chunk ahead of me. They're 7 and 9 years older than I. So I've always had excellent role models, and I think because I'm the youngest of three girls, that's given me this enormous privilege to just feel comfortable with where I am, because whatever happens in their lives, they're still fighting, they're still laughing, they're still messing up, they're still getting back on the horse or back on their bicycles or trying new things or creating themselves and creatively expressing themselves in different ways. Life goes on for them in its beautiful, expansive, wonderful way. So they're always there. But I do remember, and I'm gutted. I can't remember her name. She was a woman in her, at the time I came across her, she was, I think, in her late 60s or early 70s, and she was a doula who educated other birthing professionals about helping abuse survivors to birth. And maybe I'll have a little rummage, and we can stick her name in the show notes, because she really deserves to be praised, because she's done a lot of amazing work. She's American.
She's American.
Anyway, I'll find her. And I went to a presentation workshop kind of thing that she did with all the doulas and the birth workers, because that was my area of interest at the time. And she just owned the room. She just owned the room with this brilliant combination of authority and humility. So she absolutely understood her worth. She absolutely understood her knowledge, her value, what she was contributing to the world, and was completely humble and sweet and lovely. And obviously, I was transfixed, not so much by the content, but by how she was. And I was like, oh, that's what I want to do. That's who I would like to be like. Yeah, so
Nice.
that was a turning point for me. And I was probably early perimenopause or postnatal there at that point. So quite a long time ago. But
Yeah.
you're so right. We need these role models. And I often talk about ageism in my workshops and in my writing and stuff. And I encourage people to do exactly as you suggest, to find role models.
Or community, right? Like my community, and probably a lot of your work is like, I love that there is an age span, women in their 40s, 50s. Well, even there are outliers, but mainly 40s, 50s, 60s, early 70s. I'm like, what a gift. And we don't all find our people in our local spaces. We don't all have family, like aunties, sisters, moms, like we used to, or they die early or whatever. So yeah, we need to get creative, I think, about finding community that inspires and calls us forward, I think. Certainly that is true for me.
Absolutely, and discerning about communities that do not serve in that way,
Right.
not sticking
Yeah.
around.
Yeah. So, okay, I want to ask you to share a story that you have personally needed to question or rewrite for your own well-being, or one that has been important in your work with other women.
Yeah, I took a while to think about this, and I think what I'd like to share is about it was a big part of my perimenopause. And I was a body worker, so I was working with women in a with biodynamic body work, so it's sort of body mind energetic kind of business and emotional healing. And I'd done it for a long time, and I knew I wanted to stop. And I couldn't quite stop. So, the pandemic slowed things down and slowed things down. And I think that what happened? My hand started to swell. That was what it was. So my knuckle joints started to swell up and be painful, and I'd started to literally lose my grip. I couldn't. It was hard to undo jars of things or carry heavy saucepans. And I, of course, I did all the things like changing the way, changing my posture, changing the way I worked, more self-care, more exercises, more stretches, more working with only particular clients. I changed to working much more with the breath and the diaphragm and the belly and the womb space and all that kind of thing, which is necessarily softer tissue and requires a more delicate connection and all this kind of thing. And nothing worked. And my hands got stiffer and stiffer and stiffer until I really had to face that I needed to stop. And
And
I think that what really, I really paid attention to the movements using a sort of organic somatic process to try and let my hands express what was happening, following what they needed, listening, and sort of, and this was quite a long process. You know, it was sort of doing a bit and coming back to it, listening, taking a little step, letting go of something, coming going back again, you know. So it was over quite a long period of time. And what became clearer and clearer was that I was really attached to my work because it's a soul calling, right? Of course, it's a soul calling. But I was really attached to it because I wanted to be the good therapist, the good girl. You know, if I made people happy enough and content enough, then I would be lovable. And that's, I think that's quite common with people who do body work, because you know, you have this gift that you can just make people happy. It's very easy. It's very easy to do. And it became really clear that that was the toxicity that was sitting in my hands. It wasn't that I was in the wrong field or doing the wrong work or anything. It was the motivation behind it. It was the story. It was how I was interpreting the story. And so I had to stop. And that didn't mean that I stopped doing body work, but I mean, essentially, the work that I do on one level hasn't changed. You know, I meet people exactly as they are, and I stay curious, and I'm interested, and I watch for emergent process, and I welcome that with compassion. I mean, that's kind of what I was doing in body work. That's kind of what I do now as a mentor and facilitator. It's not that different. Tools are different, but it's the same process. But I do that now because I like it and because it's fun and interesting, primarily, but because it makes a difference in the world. Because that's why I wrote the book, because it has a bigger reach than working one-to-one or in groups. But I'm doing it from a place of, this is a gift that I have, and I have some knowledge and a huge amount of privilege in my therapeutic education that the world needs to know. And that is the story. It's not about me being loved or likable or doing it for approval. It's very different.
Yeah, so I mean, so do you feel that, you know, so you shared how you were able to attend to, and then, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so I don't know if you felt like that was a rewriting of that story or just releasing that old motivation or driver. What I'm curious about, though, because in my work sometimes I talk about like how we have these stories that have roots, some of them very deep roots, and then sometimes we come across a tap root, this really thick and deep thing, and we may never be able to eradicate it. I don't close the door on that possibility, but I do think that it's helpful to stop waiting for the one perfect day when it no longer shows up, right? And instead become more aware of it, compassionate, and able to kind of like witness it and then say, okay, and you're not driving, you know, you're not in control of my life, and I'm going to keep moving forward. So this particular story, do you think it had a root that was showing up in other places in your life? And no forcing the issue, right? But if
Yeah.
you do
Yeah,
see.
I do see it in other areas of my life. And it's exactly as you say, because, I spent a quarter of a century doing body work. My identity was so bound up in that, in being that kind of person. Because that was such a massive letting go, because if I'm not that, then who am I? Then what? That I have so much more compassion for the part of me that is just wants acceptance and wants love. And in a way, I can talk to her directly. I don't need other people to tell me about it. I get quicker and quicker at spotting, ah, there she is again. Oh, little sweetie. She just needs to know it's okay, that I've got her back, that I can hold her, and that it's okay. And that might come with, physical touch or words or just remembering, or I have visual cues around me that help me to bring me back to that place. But I think you're right. It's I love this. I love your analogy of the roots. I usually think more about onion layers. There's another layer that goes, and then we think, oh, that's it. Well, I'm sorted now. And then it comes up again in a slightly different form, and we see it again, and we just get more loving, I think, more less attached to those stories, the stories.
Yeah. Thanks, Kate, for sharing that. So I do want to ask you about your midlife experience so far. And I mean, that's sort of a big question, but in some of my questions are just like, what surprised you? Did life unfold as you expected it to? What challenged you? What do you wish younger you had known or knew how to do? Or what if you had to choose one thing that you would offer women, other women, whether they're younger than you or just, need your gifts and your voice, what's that thing that you would hand them? That bit of wisdom, knowledge, understanding that you would offer up.
I think that's the juiciest one for me. It's about talking to my younger self or talking to younger women. And I think that, mean, there's so many ways I can say this. I think it's much to become whole is much easier than you think it is. And most of the job is to get out of our own way, to find some way to lessen or drop the overthinking, to drop back into ourselves. And it's usually about doing less and doing smaller and paying more attention to what's happening inside us. And that's really hard in a winter and in a crisis. It's tough. I'm not saying that it's all Instagram shiny. You'll be pleased to hear.
Yep.
But that it's usually about doing
Mm-hmm.
less. It's usually about subtraction rather than addition. And that we can very frequently, even in crisis, find a place where we can tap into the flow of life, where we can tap into the river of energy that moves through us and moves around us, that activates, the vitality, libido, however you conceptualize it. And it's usually about doing less. So, you're okay as you are would have been something that I would have liked to have heard. Or, to anybody listening to this, considering what you've been facing, you're doing absolutely brilliantly. Have a rest. Doing
Yeah.
well.
Yes. And sometimes, right, the rest, sometimes in those crisis seasons or just real life, even including summer, when you have all of these demands on your time and focus and finances and all the things, I do think we still, wherever possible, make space for rest and even lower our expectation or the bar on what we think that should look like, right? So if you have 5 minutes, take 5 minutes, right? Because it's easy to say, well, that doesn't count. It's like, no, it does. It does. Right. But sometimes the rest is mostly I or this ex the lowering the bar is about just that internal noise. Like the doing, you're doing okay. Like for me, it's often hands on heart, Krista, I love you. I'm proud of you. You're doing a great job. I just talk to myself as much as needed, which is often.
Yeah.
Most of us, like, I don't think I've ever met a human who doesn't benefit from that loving reminder. Do you think, did I misunderstand what you were saying?
No, that's exactly what I'm saying. No, you're on the nose. And it's something, it's something that's always available to us while we're waiting for whatever we think is going to give us the correct feeling that we're craving, whatever we think that is, the happiness or the wholeness or the fullness or the status or the enoughness, the endless quest for enough that we all seem to be. I mean, that's a good story, right? We pop out and feel in our skin, in our newborn skin, you're not enough if you're female. And then spend another 5 decades unraveling that. And that's the thing that's so ubiquitous and so much in the culture that we don't even notice it's there mostly. We don't even notice it's there.
Yeah, it can be really sneaky. A lot of that is unconscious, but yeah, really shows up in so many ways. And I think like something again, coming back to community, and it's interesting that I am so dedicated to the idea of brave and compassionate community now, because my tendency really in previous years was to isolate. I'm a, like I said, a strong introvert, kind of have this like, I can do it on my own, whatever the attitude was, but also a story of rejection, like all the things that came into play. And that was a sure, fast way for me to spiral downward, like fast and hard, right? So I learned that that's one of my instincts that doesn't get to be in charge, that I need to move against. So, but really, what I wanted to say is, community as in just you and your sister, or you and your best friend, even sometimes you and your daughter, like whatever, just that other woman who can remind you when you forget that you're doing a great job. Because we forget. And no matter how many decades of hard, brave, like work, healing work, growth work we do, we need other people sometimes to just speak that over us, I think.
I think what we should do is we should issue like tickets. Okay, we'll knock them out on Canva when we finish this conversation, like a little bus ticket, tram ticket, and when you pass somebody on the street, you can say, you can give them a ticket, say, and it'll say, "You are amazing and so loved." We can just pass them out, and then everybody has them, and everybody gives a ticket, gives as many tickets away as they want to. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah,
It'd be
that's
complimenting.
beautiful.
But one of my hobbies is compliment is sort of like stealth complimenting other women.
That's
Passing them
fun.
on the escalator on the underground, saying, "Wow, you look great!" And that's just the flurry of joy that it creates. And of course, offering compliments produces the same kind of brain chemistry as receiving them, so it's win-win. Sharing joy, yeah, raising each other up. I think that's a huge thing. Right, I'm on it. I'm off to Canva now to make
Okay.
some.
All right. Well, let's just wrap up first.
Oh,
We're almost there.
okay.
But I love it. Anything where we're sprinkling joy. And yeah, I mean, I feel, yeah, whatever. We get to be as nerdy or playful as we want, right? But coming back to, where I think you started with this idea too of like just being full, like messy and just getting to be full self, like just your real, your true self, whatever the heck that is in the moment. And, that's something that I love is like one of my, one of my mind, body, spirit intentions for this year is to be joy-filled and overflowing. And it's taken me a lot of work to learn how to allow joy in the midst of pain and grief, like not joy, because I realized that for years it was almost an intellectual relationship. And then learning how to move joy from my brain deeper into my body, where it like resides in my bones and it's just part of me now. And then allowing myself to fill up and hold that, not just give it all away immediately, but hold it, sustain it so that I overflow. And that's it. I didn't, it took me a couple years to be able to say this out loud without any like emotional reaction to it. I just feel comfortable now. But before I was like, you can't say that. What if you lose all your joy tomorrow? Like, and now I just know that it's not a win or lose. It's like, I fill back up, I receive it. And I, anyway, so, but I love that idea. Like when we allow ourselves to be filled up and we either leak through our cracks, including the broken, the places that we deem broken, we leak out and we spill over into the world around us. And it's not because any of us are perfect, right? Like we're so far from it, and it has nothing to do with that. And I think that is one of the gifts of midlife is releasing any of that, like you thinking that you should be, different from who and how you are. With my cowlick, constantly driving me nuts and, just whatever, the real full humanity.
Yeah, yes, it's a gift. It's a menopause gift for sure.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Let's end with this. Do you have any favorite rhythms, rituals, habits, or practices that keep you anchored in true self or otherwise feeling safe at home and joyful in your body and life?
Many. I'm not high maintenance in the sense of hair and nails and treatments, but I'm very high maintenance on the self-care front. So my main practice is yoga nidra. It's a rare day that I don't have one. There's often two and sometimes three. And for people who don't know, that's a guided meditation practice. The structure of it takes you into a meditative place. And through depending on which theme, what sort of theme you use in your yoga nidra, you can speak directly to the unconscious. So it's you can you you know you can use it for healing whatever is going on with you. And it's very it can be very concise. It can be 10, 20 minutes lying or sitting or whatever. And that so that's two or three times a day. What else? Mornings are very important, the way I set up my day, so that mornings are very springy. Mornings I wake up and know stuff. Mornings are very clear mentally for me. And I can, yeah, mornings are great. I love mornings, so I have to protect them very carefully. So definitely no screens, no phone, not a peek at my phone until I have definitely written some sort of journal entry of some description, or drawn a picture, or been outside, or if I do all three, then that's amazing. But it's not That doesn't happen every day. One of those will happen every day. And it just protects the no, what, how can I say this? It connects me with the preciousness of life every day. Even when it, and it's very, very glorious at the moment. We're recording in May, and it's everything that May should be. The sky is blue, the grass is lush, there are birds everywhere, roses are coming, you know, it's mad. It's almost over, it's
And
almost
she means you in the UK.
Yeah.
My neck of the woods isn't quite so lush
You'll be there
yet.
soon. Another,
Yes.
what, another 3 weeks?
Yeah, outside my yard, outside my window here in my office, this tree, apple tree, I noticed that it yesterday, I don't think anything was open, and the buds have just sprung
Wow.
open, this new fresh little like green. It's yeah, it's coming.
It's so precious. Why was I talking about that? Oh yes, because the preciousness of spring, and that one of the things that we need to do in spring is to protect and to care for the tenderness of it. So mornings are pretty precious. What else? Yeah, drawing practice is good, creative practice. You know, always, there's never enough time. There's always something more pressing or important or worthy or sensible or something that might earn me some money or move towards earning my living, or you know, there's always more stuff, but just putting a pen on paper and following a line is a portal to a different planet. And if a day passes when I don't make something, and that, you know, whether it's a drawing or a, or write something, or write in a yoga nidra, or write an article, or make something, or stitch something, then I feel less than. And if a long time passes, then I start to kind of get thinner and more dry, less juice. So yeah, it's it is definitely a practice, and I have to put boundaries around it to make it happen.
Yeah, I love that. And I love a good slow morning focused on going inside, like, thinking, puttering, processing. Like that's really important for my wholeness. And if I don't have ample spaciousness in my life, I want to quit my work because it feels like, sure, I can show up and offer things, but then it feels like it's coming from my head and not deeper down.
Spaciousness is essential.
Thank you, Kate. I have many more questions circling in my mind, but we'll just wrap up there. I really appreciate you and the work you're doing in the world. And thank you for this conversation.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me and for your tenderness and compassion.